kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Fun show. Later on in the episode, we are going to have two awesome musicians, Viking Guitar and Mega Beardo, on the show chatting with me. But before then, reviews are going to happen. And Cole Martin, you're kicking off the show. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm here.
That's some days that's the best you can ask for.
I mean, I guess. doing what I can with what I've got.
That's kind of like not what you'd find on a fortune cookie, but it works at the same time.
What'd your fortune cookie say?
Cookies.
let me open my crack. Do what you can with what you got, I guess. It's a shitty fortune.
That's why they're doing cookies and not fortune cookies.
But we now, should probably start, huh?
We probably should.
Probably. So let's kick things off with The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing 3, developed and published by Neocore Games, released January 1st on Xbox One for $14.99 as part of the Games with Gold program through the month of January. It's time to return to Borgovia, where you had already liberated the land from the tyranny of mad science, only to ignite the spark of a civil war, then grudgingly led the resistance against the military genius who tried to destroy everything you'd been working for. However, while you fought an army of mechanical monsters and defeated General Harker, you suffered betrayal from your mysterious ally who tricked you and obtained the most powerful artifact, the Hidden Death The Deathless. Cole, tell me about Van Helsing 3.
Well, it is a third in the trilogy. It is the final culmination of everything we've been working for in the previous Van Helsing games. It is also, unfortunately, for gameplay mechanic-wise, a complete copy and paste of 1 and 2. Played those, you are going to launch this and be like, I already know exactly what I'm doing, because it's the exact same thing. On the bright side of that, if you like the first two, you're not going to be disappointed. You're just going to be like, yay! But if you were hoping for something to be changed or a little different mechanic-wise, you're a little out in the cold. Because this is exactly what you'd expect when you load up a Van Helsing game. It's not a bad thing, though.
I was going to say, that's not necessarily bad, because I love the Van Helsing games.
I didn't play a whole lot of the first one. I've put a lot of time into this one, though. And I'll get to why in a minute. But I've spent a lot of time with this one. And I wish I had already played the first more, because I did enjoy it. And one of the best things about it is that, of course, you play as Van Helsing. And he has the companion Lady Katarina. And up until this point in the series, Lady Katarina's death and everything, she's a ghost that follows Van Helsing around, for anybody that's not familiar with this. But the circumstances of her death has come up a few different times, but it's always just kind of swept under the rug, and we don't really know what happened to her. Here is the point where we find what happened to her.
Ooh.
And so there's a lot of camaraderie built up between Van Helsing and Lady Katarina as we get to these moments. The writing is really well done for this, but there is an odd little quirk in that, obviously, with Van Helsing being a hack and slash kind of game, even though it's, you know, an RPG, you walk around and you beat up on monsters the whole time. It was kind of odd to have, like, these important emotional moments of Katarina's backstory being juxtaposed with just hack and slash. Oh, I'm going to take out some giant, you know, zombie ladies, then they're gonna die, and then she's gonna tell me somewhere about how she died. Then we're gonna walk through the cemetery a little more, and it was a very odd, no other word for it but juxtaposition. It was just like, I feel all emotional for her, and then I'm like, okay, well, I'm just gonna go beat up some more shit. Very, very odd. As for why it took me so long to play this game, there are multiplayer aspects for Van Helsing. I knew that there was campaign co-op, which is good. Play it with a friend, and it's even more enjoyable. But I didn't know that there were PvP sides. Van Helsing 3 has 8v8 PvP, but it also has a battle royale mode. There's one hitch. You can't play those until you're level 27.
Oh, wow.
And the game ends when you're level 30. So you've got to beat the majority of the campaign, either by yourself or with a friend, before you can take on the PvP. You have to build up your character and basically be prepared. You can't go into this and get, you know, your world wrecked because you're low level. So I spent 3 straight days playing nothing but Van Helsing to get to level 27. And I was so excited that I jumped right into it, and it took me 15 minutes to find a match for Battle Royale. And I loaded then what? In, and there was one other person in there.
Oh, God.
And so Battle Royale, well, basically, you take out PvE characters to earn keys and scrolls to give you different abilities. Unlock keys or unlock the treasure chest for gold and you know, more scrolls. Kind of change the way you play. It's kind of the equivalent of finding a weapon, but you use your weapons and shit that you got in the campaign. The other players, for on their end, they look the same. They look like they're Van Helsing moving around on the map. On your end, they spawn as different enemies, different kinds of creatures. They spawn in as different creatures that you would see in the regular game. So once you take them on, if you defeat them, they have to respawn with nothing and start over. If you lose, you lose all your money and your scrolls and your keys, and you have to start over. So I was 1v1 with this guy. I'm not sure how many are supposed to be in a battle royale. I think it's at least 8, but I found one other guy from the start. A second guy joined the game and I killed him and he left. But me and the first guy were going at it pretty hard, and we were kind of bouncing back and forth between first place, and then I kind of pulled ahead and I killed him about 4 times in a row and he quit. And then I could not find anybody else to play with. I spent another 20 minutes looking for a game, and I was just like, I spent 3 days grinding for this.
I wonder if this is going to be an issue where, because it's new, it's a new game to the platform, and it's a free games with gold, but number 2 wasn't. I wonder if there's just a lot of people who are starting with number 3 instead of, you know, the point was kind of to carry your character over from 1 to 2, now 2 to 3. But right. if people are just starting fresh with 3, it might be a while until there's people ready to do the multiplayer stuff.
Indeed, especially because, you know, you have to be 27. And I seriously put, I wish I had looked at the actual number of hours. But I spent a lot of time just hacking and slashing my way through the world, leveling up my damnedest. I think one of the things about it, too, with the PvP, because it does carry your character from single player, how you are spec'd for the RPG side of this game can definitely affect playing in multiplayer if you can find people to play with. Like, I had set my character up to be very HP heavy. And, but I had also set up Lady Katarina to basically be nothing but straight DPS. So I was a tank that would not die for shit. And she could one or two hit and take down anything. and it was kind of unfair. So there definitely needs to be some kind of balance that works its way into multiplayer, because I could see that being a problem where there's just the one tanky motherfucker that was me just running through everybody.
Yeah.
So I don't know how, when we get to that point where there is an active, and I hope there is, an active base at some point, maybe closer to the end of the month after people's had some time, then I'm curious to see how or if the meta changes and maybe like it balances out and isn't so bad, or if maybe just not everybody's going to do like I did and dump all their points into body.
Maybe.
I would like to add, though, you can go into the secret lair in the campaign, and if you find that your specs aren't working for you, you can pay to respec yourself.
Which is always good.
Just change everything. It is good, especially because there's achievements for having 100 points on each of the four different loss of phrase. Damn.
Stats.
Yes.
Well, because it's a free game with gold, you can't really give it a buy it for that. But for the people who don't have gold or who miss out on the games with gold promotion for $15, what do you think of this?
I do say it's a very, very worthwhile try it, is what I would say. I really enjoyed it. Just I'm worried about what that multiplayer is going to look like in the long run.
Yeah. I kind of wonder if this really is something better played after you've played through the first two games and carried your character through.
That was another thing I wondered, too. And also, I'd like to point out that while the third one is Games with Gold currently, and the first one was in the past, the second is currently on sale for $7.50.
And by the time this episode is out, it will not be on sale.
It probably might. I don't know. I don't think it was specifically deals with gold. I think it's just on sale.
Yeah, those usually maybe. Only last a week, though.
Well, goddamn it, maybe, maybe not. look, because it might be there.
See, if only you were ready for this one for the Friday show. Would have had all weekend for people to pick up number two.
I'm the worst.
Yeah, you are. No, but CJ's the worst, still.
That level 27 cat, I'm the second worst.
I know, we've had some bad people on this show.
Right, I'm better than Carnage.
There you go. But next game to talk about is called Inner Space, developed by Polyknights, published by Aspyr Media, released January 16th on Xbox One, Switch, Steam, and PS4 for $19.99. Inner Space is an exploration flying game set in the Inverse, a world of inside-out planets with no horizons. Soar through ancient skies and abandoned oceans to discover the lost history of this fading realm, where gods still wander. Your greatest journey is within. Paul, what is Inner Space?
You know how we use the term walk-sploration for walking sims?
Mm-hmm.
This is a flasploration.
It's a funny word to begin with, but hearing your accent say it is just so much better. A flasploration.
But it is a basically flasploration. Like, that's all you do is you're flying and you're exploring. It's a very physics-based game, but not in the way that you would expect. You would think, oh, you're going to be flying, and so, you know, gravity will pull you down to the ground, you need to take off. Not here. Not with Inner Space. The planets for Inner Space actually have gravity that moves away from the center of the planet. So it's a little more difficult to do the dives and to get into the water. Because I do say, you know, it's a flying game. But your plane, if you find the appropriate relics and get the right kind of upgrades, can dive into the water and you can swim or you can fly up. These are really interesting worlds, and the way that you move around them is kind of simple, though. It's just your basic controls you would expect for any kind of flying game. But one thing is your plane kind of makes these really wide angles unless you drift. And drifting is kind of a pain in the ass. I imagine this is something that worked way better on PC than it does on controller. It's functional, but don't be surprised if you have to take a few different passes to accomplish a goal. Or just be better at games than I am.
Yeah, that
but
works.
For me, it took a few extra tries. As soon as you say drift, my mind goes, yeah, I can't do that.
Tokyo drift, motherfuckers.
Rednecks don't drift. but it is interesting. But because of the whole invertedness of the physics, it does feel like the controls are kind of clunky and they're difficult to adjust to. I found myself just kind of randomly slamming into things a lot. Thankfully, the game is very forgiving, and because it does have that walking sim nature about it, even though you're not walking, you can go at your own pace. You can look around the world and discover things on your own time. What you are looking for, your main goal on each planet is to find relics from the ancient gods. And these relics, when you do find them, you have to go through a process of, you know, basically you just click the button, but it goes through a process of putting them together. And then it uncovers a blueprint, if you will, for like an upgrade. So you'll find one relic that will give your plane a different set of wings, or you'll find another that will make it to where it can dive into the water. A third will, you know, add guns so you can shoot down walls that are in your way, kind of thing. Yeah. So it's not all fly exploration. You can pew pew a little. So the. But it really does just boil down to explore the world, learn the lore. And there's not a whole lot beyond that. There isn't any kind of navigation on your HUD. And this was probably my greatest complaint, that I just never knew where I was going, if it was somewhere I'd already been or not, until I was there again. And I was like, well, shit, I've been here 27 times. You know, it would be nice if there was, oh, you're going north, south, some kind of minor compass or something to help let
the
you know.
Directionally challenged?
Yeah. I can't find my way out of a wet paper bag with a flashlight and a map. So I need a little help. And I was just missing that here. That and the whole, like I said, it takes some getting used to with the controls. They're not horrible. They're just
different.
Convoluted because they're so different that it just took some really, you know, mustering to be like, shit, I dove for the 27th time when I needed to go up, and now I can't find my way back up again because there's no map to tell me which way's up anymore.
So this all sounds like user error.
Pretty much. But I do admit, it was a really interesting game. Like, I was interested in finding the relics. Some of them, you can find the relic whole. Others, you've got to find pieces and put them together. And then you get to wait and discover, you know, how it worked or what it was for. And so it was really neat. There's a lot of interesting lore tucked away in here.
Nice. So $20, your thoughts?
I give it a try. $20 seems a little high for it. The price is a sticking point for me because it's not, you know, polished as I'd like for it to be, given that everything is inverted. Like, if it was something where you're like, oh, okay, everything's inverted and I immediately know what to do with that anyway, you don't. You just kind of have to struggle with it for a little while until you get used to it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I still give it a try. David's home.
Well, next game to talk about is called Roller Coaster Legends, developed and published by War Ducks. This one released December 21st on PlayStation VR for $4.99. That is right. We are dipping our toes back into the PSVR scene. I ended up having to pick one up for a separate reason, and I'm hoping things pan out. But until then, I'm back to covering VR stuff. Speed off on an 8-minute roller coaster journey only possible in virtual reality. Visit the Temple of Poseidon, the River Styx, Tartarus, and the Palace of Hades by zipping up and down daring drops and twists while sitting on your couch. Transport yourself to the land of Greek mythology on a roller coaster ride you'll never forget. Let's get this out of the way. This is not a game. This is an 8-minute roller coaster ride where you start it, you hit the button to start it, and then you just watch and enjoy for 8 minutes. Fairly fast paced, which, given I haven't really done a PSVR game since mine broke, I was kind of surprised that I went through the entire thing without feeling nauseous to the point I had to rip the headset off.
I was about to ask about the nausea.
I was pleasantly surprised. The first time that I saw this game, I watched Ashley play it, and I'm just watching her video on the TV, and I'm like, oh my God, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this. Because, you know, I've covered my motion sickness on the show in the past, and it happens in some of the more intense PSVR games. And there were some stretches in the middle there where my stomach started to feel kind of tingly, but it was never bad enough to the point that I'm like, I need to stop. I need to pause. I need to take the headset off. I need a breath of air. Just, I was fine. It would immediately seem to get into a slower section where it was, you know, things would settle down enough. It was paced very well with a lot of fast sections broken up by just enough lulls in the action to give you a breath of, you know, just a breather. Overall, the game looked great. I keep saying game. The ride looked great. There's just, don't go into this expecting a game. There is no control. There is no shooting. There is nothing to do. The controller has two functions. The X button pauses it. The triangle button restarts it. That's it. And once you're done and the credits roll, it starts back over. That's it.
So if you don't get sick the first time, you can just keep watching it until you do.
If you want, yeah. I actually went through it twice to see if there were any differences. I didn't notice any kind of differences, any changes. So I'm just assuming it's the same 8-minute ride every time, which for $5 isn't that horrible. It's a decently, you know, decently long experience for a relatively low VR price. I think the big thing that works in the favor of this game is it is a really cool showcase where if you have friends who are like, oh, I've never done VR before, well, let me give you this experience to check out. I think this is a really cool showcase for someone who's never done VR before to sit them down, put a headset on them. They don't have to worry about fucking around with controls or like, how do I do this? Do I have to do that? Just wear it and watch and enjoy. So it's one of those games, $5. It's easily one of those fuck it, why not? It's cool. Cheap. It is entertaining. I didn't get sick, and it's fun to show to other people. So do it up.
Nice.
And then last game that you're here to talk about is called Beholder Complete Edition, developed by Alloar, published by Curve Digital, released January 16th on PS4, January 19th on Xbox One. We don't have a price yet. My guess is that it's going to be $14.99 based on the original game Steam and DLC price. And this version includes all the DLC. If we're drastically wrong, I'll be sure to let you guys know. But we're going to run this based on the guess that it's $14.99. So fingers crossed. And if it's
cheaper, we can be surprised.
Yeah. you're a state-installed landlord in a totalitarian state. I hate that fucking word because it's so confused. You must spy on tenants, peep, eavesdrop, and profile. You must report on anyone capable of plotting subversion against the state. You must, but will you? Cole, did you?
Not always.
So what is this game?
This game is a 2D puzzle strategy kind of game. Use the term puzzle lightly, but I'm going to go with it. More strategy than puzzle. But you, just like you said, you play as Carl. Carl has become an apartment manager in this very North Korea-esque type of country. I want to say, though, it's not North Korea. And I can tell you that it's not North Korea because there are two other countries that are mentioned in the game. And one is North Borea and the other is South Borea. but the name of the country we're in, if it says it outright, I've never caught it while playing it. And I've had to re-sit through the beginning a few times and I'll get to that in a minute. but you play as Carl him and his family are moved into the basement of this apartment complex, and he has to balance the needs of his family while also balancing the needs of the tenants and trying to stay on the right side of the law, which is really hard to do when everything from books to blue jeans are against the law.
How dare you wear blue jeans?
My God, you have no idea. I've been caught with blue jeans. and cardigan sweaters. Those are apparently problematic too. You have one key that opens all the apartments, but you have to be careful because the people still lack a little bit of privacy given everything going on in this country. If the tenant is in the apartment when you try to sneak in, they will catch you and oust you, and you will lose some of your reputation. You have to wait for them to be gone. You can get a little bit of help, though, with watching what they're doing while they're in the apartments if you install cameras. And you install cameras in the smoke detectors. There are three different types of cameras. They cost different values of reputation points. And you earn reputation from the authorities if you snitch, basically. So then you can install these cameras. You can see what people are doing. If they do something that is illegal, the little icon will turn from green to red. And then you just click down on the button and the right stick, and it adds it to your notes. When you are in each room, you can go up to different items like a wardrobe or the bed, tables, and you can search. And it takes there's a little timer that'll come up and, you know, go counter or go clockwise. Once it's done searching, you can see all the items that are on that piece of furniture. If there are any illegal items, you can make a note of it. You can also make notes of items that imply wealth, like a mask from the theater or a book of expensive stamps, or if there's anything like foreign items like foreign salt, even art supplies, just incredibly mundane everyday things. You can press Y and it goes into your little notebook. In the corner of your little basement apartment is a computer, and you have to go down there and write in profiles of your tenants using what you found in their apartments against them. When it comes to the things, though, that they have outright done illegally, you have two options. You can file a report with the police, who will come, beat the shit out of the tenant, and then arrest them. You make a whopping $250 for everybody that gets busted. Or you can blackmail them. And you can tell them, I saw you had this. They don't know it's you. You can say, you had this item, you did this, you did that. But if you put $2,000 in the potted plant tonight, I won't turn you in.
Interesting. So it's kind of like a management sim.
Yes. So you do all of these tasks to earn money, but you got to be careful because the cops are lurking, and they will also send in spies. They may be watching you without you even knowing it. You'll think it's just a normal tenant. So you have to stay on your toes. On top of that, your family has needs. Your daughter gets sick. Your son needs to be able to pay for college. He needs textbooks for college. You have to come up with those things. And if you don't, there can be dire consequences for your family. Your child might die. One of them might not make it, you know, to the end of the year if you don't do the right thing. If you piss off a tenant, they might kill you.
Oh, wow.
To save their own hide. If you die, then you get an ending that, you know, displays the death and whatever happens. And then you can start back. You can continue back from your last checkpoint, though, after you die. So you can make different decisions. But there comes a point where certain things just get locked in and you just have to accept that that's what you've done and move on. The only alternative to this, though, is that you do have ample loads and saves that are just, they're just there. Basically, every time you hit a new objective gets added, there's a save point for that. And you can just load back whenever you need to change things if you're not happy with where it's going. And you can kind of rewrite history. It is worth it, though, to just kind of like follow the different paths, even if you're not going on a what may seem like a good path, because you might be able to fix it later. Mm. Or you'll get just an interesting or different kind of ending. You meet characters you wouldn't meet otherwise. It's really, it sounds complicated, but when you're playing it, you really just catch on very quickly to this person. If I make this decision again, this person won't be there and they won't have an item I need to get me through to, you know, the next mission after that. Some of the missions are timed and others are not. For example, if your daughter gets sick, you'll have so long to get her the medicine. And in this regime, everything but aspirin is illegal.
Oh, God.
And you need a prescription from a doctor for aspirin. And not all doctors can write that prescription.
Jesus.
So you have to, you know, you have so long to find that medication. And if you don't, it changes the outcome of the game. That can be really stressful because it's easy to look at it and go, oh, I have like 120 hours before that's an issue. It's fine. And then you look and you like, it's red and you've got 1 hour and your kid's going to die and you need $15,000. So good luck to you.
Oh, God.
So it can be really stressful, but I've found that I enjoyed it way more than I expected. I know that I like these kind of odd, like, strategy games, but this just is really creative, and it's a take on the genre that I wasn't expecting. Like, with the micromanagement, doesn't feel overwhelming. Sometimes with these kind of games, it's like, oh, you have to do every little tiny mundane task, and you're sitting there, you know, you've got to go mop up a puddle that leaked from the sink while somebody's getting murdered over here, and you have to go save them at the same time. It gets a little muddy. This one doesn't do that, and I was really happy with Beholder for that. You do have to worry about, you know, obviously you're managing the whole apartment complex, so like, if somebody gets arrested, their apartment becomes vacant, and then you've got to have it repaired and cleaned up and prepared for a new tenant, and then you've got to accept a new tenant. Who you accept might change the whole ecosystem of your apartment building and your game.
That's really cool.
So it's really well done. I was really happy with this.
Nice. Well, this is the part where I would ask for the price. What would you recommend? But since we don't know the price right now, and the game releases this week, let's just take guesses. Anywhere from $10 to $20. What would you recommend? And like, what are your thoughts on the game in general for a multitude of prices in that range?
I tend to recommend around the $15 range for something like this. I do want to throw in there, this is the complete edition. On Steam, you buy the game and then there's one DLC for it. This on Xbox already has the DLC. You can't play it until you get through at least one full run of the campaign, but the DLC is there. And so I tend to be a little more forgiving to say this, definitely if it was like $15, I'd be like, yeah, that's definitely a buy it. But even at the $20 price tag, I think I would still say buy it just because I enjoyed it so much. And if you're into those kind of like strategies and sims, then you would definitely not be upset at a $20 price tag here.
Sounds good. And I'm sure we'll have an update on the next episode on the official mm-hmm. price and a complete verdict. But it sounds like as long as it's under $20, you're all for this one.
Indeed.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, that is all with you. But for now, we're going to swap you out with our good friend Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing today?
It's cold outside.
It is.
My nature's a drunk weirdo. It was 65. And now it's 13.
Yeah, like something. We were at MAGFest. We saw each other at MAGFest. At MAGFest, it was a degree outside, maybe.
We may have got a single degree.
And then we came home from MAGFest, and it was immediately 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's back to, like, 10. And what the fuck?
That's just proof that global warming doesn't exist.
Not at all. Clearly, climate change is a hoax.
It's totally fake. All winter. This is normal shit.
This is your first appearance since MAGFest. How was your mag?
It was actually pretty decent. Like, I was there originally. I did my MAGPL, which is the MAGFest Pokemon League. I run a stint there as the Steel Gym leader. Had fun with that. And I bought a board game and some art. And I got to a point where I was like, I think I just want to go home. I'm not really enjoying myself anymore. This isn't my con, as it were. And then somehow, like, after I said that, the con suddenly became fun. I started going to a couple of shows. I bumped into some friends, such as yourself. And I played some games, almost that Dance Revolution thing, but seriously, I don't have the heart for it anymore. Especially not when my shower was not in the same building. So,
oh, God. Very true. Very true.
I don't know how guys do that in those game rooms. Like, I'm going to play this dance game room. All these people, where's your shower? I don't even know. Who cares? I want to dance. Like, no. That's not how this works at all. But, I'll play dance games nowhere near this place.
We saw each other when? Like, during Viking Guitar Live, huh?
Yeah, you came across because you had texted me, and I'm like, hey, it's Joe. I'm at the Viking Guitar Show. You're like, look over here.
And
I'm
standing like, directly in front of you.
I was so busy doing the Batusi at a metal show that I didn't even realize you were standing right there. I was lost in the sauce, man. It was a good show.
Did you like them? You thought they were pretty good?
Oh, dude. I've been a fan of Viking Guitar for years, and I think it was actually last year, 2016, I was bugging some of the guys at the con. I was like, you need to get Viking Guitar in here. Get all these other bands. They've been here, done that. Get Viking Guitar out here. Now I'm ready. And like out of nowhere, like one day Adam goes, hey, Pernell, you might want to keep your eye out for tomorrow's announcement. I'm like, what's happening tomorrow? Something weird. And it turned out it was Viking Guitar, and I lost my shit.
Nice.
But then somehow I managed to forget that they were actually playing MAGFest at all. And as I was about to go home, a friend of mine was like, don't you realize that Viking Guitar is going on in like an hour? I'm like, well, shit, I'm going to that. I totally forgot about them. And, of course, I had a freaking ball. And I didn't realize that they actually have a live band that is, I think you told me about this, but they have a live band that's different from just Viking Guitar himself. Mm-hmm. And the live band is what we got at MAG. So that was a whole other experience that I wasn't expecting.
So you know where else you could check out Viking Guitar live?
Where?
On this show directly after these reviews.
Really, though?
Yep. So I have an episode you're going to want to listen to.
Dun, dun, dun.
Eric and Ryan. So we have Viking Guitar and Mega Beardo going to be joining us after just two more reviews. So we should probably get those out of the way and get to the important shit on this show, huh?
Hey, what do you trust say? I mean, am I kidding? They are pretty cool.
They are much cooler than the rest of this show.
Okay, we can agree on that. But in our defense, though, they're a great freaking band.
They are. They're so good. But, first game that we're going to talk about is Heart and Slash, developed by A Heartful of Games, published by Badland Games, released December 22nd on the Switch for $14.99. You play as Heart, an innocent robot fighting to escape the grip of the evil and all-seeing machine Quasi, Quality Assurance Systems. But make no mistake, Heart and Slash is a hard game. Every death is permanent and means a new randomly generated level for you to start over with, a different set of weapons and items you can use, new enemies to fight, and secrets to explore. Pernell, what did you think of Heart and Slash?
Heart and Slash is an interesting title in the fact that aesthetically, I wasn't too big on it, partly for the same reason that it happens for a lot of roguelike, which is that you die so much that you see the same terrain over and over and over again. But gameplay-wise, I got way more than I thought I was going to get out of this game. It is a lot of fun. Essentially, it plays like an old devil, like Devil May Cry used to, if you remember that game. Mm-hmm. Melee bashing, air combos, ground pounding, all that crazy shit. And the way it works is, you start in a one room, you go up to another room that contains three starter weapons. or three starter armor pieces, or one weapon and a trash can lid. You don't know, because it randomly generates three things to start the game with. And then it tasks you with exploring this labyrinth, trying to find either Quasi or a way out of the building you're in. I don't know which one, because I'm too busy dying all the damn time. I don't know what happens at the end. But what ends up happening is you get this gear, you equip it, and then every time you go to a different room, you end up fighting a wave of enemies. And there's a variety of different types of guys. You'll have heavies, which will carry like mallets, or there's like a running splash attack, or sometimes they'll come padded with extra armor and shields. There are smaller dudes that are like maybe thin robots that are nimbler that will sometimes carry like, you know, spears, or just like swords, or just want to shoot guns at you or whatever. And there's like little tiny robot squares that might explode on contact. It also aerial enemies too. There's a large variety of enemies that show up in this game, and they all have different weaknesses too. From an elemental stance, there's fire weapons that do fire damage, ice weapons that do ice damage, electric weapons that do, you guessed it, water damage. No, electric damage, and also just flat out melee gear. So I guess that would be sort of like blunt damage. And every enemy has a weakness based on their physical layout, their property, like the color of their armor or the display on their monitor face. So, and every once in a while, as you go from different rooms, you'll either find emptiness, you'll find other armor pieces or weapon pieces, or you might find a mini boss room where you have to fight a wave of guys and they lock you inside. And of course the occasional super boss, which will be like one of the giant robots that guys Quasi operates or maintains. So upgrading all your gear, being your armor pieces or your weaponry, is done by way of using bolts. Every time you kill a unique enemy in the game, unique as in you can't like spam a kill, you can't like stomp a guy until he like just spills bolts everywhere. It's one kill, one set of bolts. So every time you kill a guy, you get bolts. And for every, say, 10 to 15 bolts, you get a box of bolts. And every weapon and armor piece can be upgraded for a certain number of boxes of bolts. And it's cool that you can upgrade your gear and kind of run along with that to kind of, you know, expand your repertoire of gear. And every time you upgrade Hart himself with bolt boxes, you actually increase your health meter in addition to just increasing his abilities. But what I don't like about this system is that every weapon and armor piece has these upgrades, but they're not very well descriptive. Like, they're very obtuse. Like, one might say, let's say you get a sword, and one of the upgrades for the sword might be, hey, man, this thing is weird. Like, I just made that line up, but obviously what the intent I'm trying to imply here is that you have no clue what the hell I'm saying that will happen to the sword if you upgrade. Whoa, that was weird, or that would be weird. But that's how odd and out of place some of these descriptions are. There are some things that make sense, like it'll say, makes you a little nimbler, or secret technique unlock. Well, it doesn't tell you what the secret technique is, or easier to evade enemies. But it doesn't tell you exactly what these upgrades do. And armor pieces are even stranger, because sometimes, like, there was one call I got called, like, the Clockwork Cavalade, where it told you to hit the heavy button and the evade at the same time to do, like, a chest burst attack. So I was like, cool, this tells me what to do with it. But then I'll get other stuff that'll say, like, can freeze time. But it tells you nothing about how to freeze time. It doesn't tell you how to activate the armor piece's ability. You just know that somehow it stops time.
It can do it, you just got to figure out how.
Exactly, and that kind of irked me, because, again, this is a roguelike. I'm likely going to die before I figure out anything. They should at least give me that info to say, hey, here's how you use this item's special ability. And if the developer is listening to this and it does tell me, by all means, write into SML and say, Pernell, you clearly missed this screen, you dimwit, because I checked the control screen. I got a configuration of controls. I read and reread the actual weapon and armor screens. Nothing told me how to stop time with the Clockwork Gauntlet, or whatever it was called, the gauntlet on the Clockwork arm piece. But that is like probably the main gripe I have with the game. The other gripe I have, which isn't necessarily a detriment, it doesn't ruin the game, it's just something that needs to be pointed out, is that this has classic action game camera awfulness. So you'll be constantly manipulating that right thumbstick to keep track of enemies. You can't even lock onto enemies unless you have a helmet armor piece on. I had to find a good old wiki to tell me that, because I remember in the Like in the tutorial, they said hit this button to lock on an enemy. But then when I was playing the game, I couldn't lock on anybody. And according to the wiki, apparently you have to actually have a helmet piece for lock on to work.
No, so it seems like that's a running theme in roguelikes like this, like Binding of Isaac, where it's just a lot of trial and error in trying to figure things out. And pretty much as a community, you tell each other the ins and outs of items.
Yeah, that I can dig. I mean, if that's what's going on here, and that's what they intended, I can give them that. It's not, you know, it's not too bad. It was just the fact that I feel like it would be nice if I could get the most out of all of my gear. Yeah. Instead of just like stumbling around hoping they'll figure out how it does something.
I totally understand. But like, think the first time that someone plays Binding of Isaac and like they've run into all these different items, nothing says what it does, how to use it, what you're doing. You're just kind of like figuring out as you go. But you talk to someone who's played it for, you know, a year straight, and they're like, oh, well, this does this. It increases your tiers. It does this with distance. And like, this item does this, and it could go over here, and like, it'll do an automatic attack kind of. And you're just sitting there like, how the fuck do you know this shit?
Well, you got to admit, though, that, I mean, I have come across some items that are definitely like the community pretty much helps each other out with it. But a lot of the stuff in Isaac is fairly intuitive. Like, you'll get this amulet, and the amulet's description doesn't say anything special, but if you start trying to attack, you'll notice your tiers are a different color. Yeah. So clearly, you may not know what it did to your tiers yet, but you know your tiers are a different color. Mm-hmm. So something's happening to them. So it's like, there's stuff like that where you at least get some indication that something's happening, but you don't quite know. And another thing I noticed about this game that has that motif is one playthrough, only one of them, I got all four pieces of the clockwork armor. And when I put all four pieces on, my guy was like kind of emanating a clockwork aura, ooh, which made me believe that the set piece had a special ability or benefit. But of course, I have no freaking clue what that was. Just that he was suddenly a clockwork aura, Super Saiyan, you know, heart bot. And no. I was just running around hoping something would happen to trigger. Like, oh, that's what it's doing. But it also looked kind of cool, too. But one more thing I got to mention, because I don't want to miss out on this, because this is very important, is another very, very clever mechanic to this game that I actually is both brutal and something I also really appreciate is the fact that in order to heal yourself, there are, aside from the occasional enemy giving you a health pickup or a box having one, you heal yourself by recycling your own parts. So let's say you have a sword you're swinging around of your three. You don't use it too often, but you use enough. And you get to the point where you're about to die. Crap, I need to find some health fast. You go into your inventory and sell your arm.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. You got a little bit more health to run around with, but you also lose that weapon you were swinging around, or that helmet, or that leg piece, or whatever. Yeah, so,
it's a cool give-and-take mechanic in that game.
Oh, yeah. It's really awesome. And sometimes you'll come across like an armor piece in a room, and you're like, I don't want this piece of crap. My other stuff is better, but I can recycle that piece and do something with it.
Get a little bit of health out of that.
Mm-hmm. So, like, all these things combined, I genuinely had a great time with this game. I talked to a friend about it, like, off the side, and was like, hey, I'm going to do a review for this game. I'm just saying, you might want to look into it. And he comes back and tells me that apparently word on the street is this game has a lot of glitches and slowdown, and maybe that was the case on previous releases. But I didn't experience any of that on the Switch. So maybe they hacked that last stuff out and it's a fully functional product now.
Maybe. I can't recall any slowdown when I played it on Xbox One. It's very possible it was there and I just don't remember because I'm old and stupid. But I do remember getting some kind of weird glitch when I was in like the sewer level, mm-hmm, where my character didn't attack and then it just kind of got stuck in an attack loop.
Ooh.
And I couldn't do any. I just had to quit the game.
Oh man, I hope that's not something that's waiting in the wings for my ass. But
I only ran into it once ever, so I don't think it was a very common thing. But
I played
games are
going to
have glitches. That's just the era we're in now. Games aren't perfect.
And I can say though, I played this game for multiple hours and I did not experience one of those glitches. So at least for the areas I was able to play through and all my sucky ability to play this game, I was glitch free. So
nice.
My hope is that they at least they improved on that. So maybe the glitches of the past are gone.
Maybe.
So,
but $15 on this one. What is your verdict, Purnell?
If you're a fan of action combat games, 3D, of course, and you are not averse to camera sickness, camera span sickness. I think it's a buy. It's a lot of fun.
And that baller-ass soundtrack, too.
Oh, it does have a good OST. I was bopping to it.
Nice. But one final game to talk about tonight is called Gunhouse, developed by Necrosoft Games, published by our friends at Other Ocean Interactive. This one released January 15th on the Switch for $14.99. Load your guns, rain death from above, protect your valuable orphans, defeat giant improbable bosses. Gunhouse is part puzzle, part active tower defense, as you make big combos to launch a hail of bullets and special attacks at the alien invaders who would like nothing better than to consume your delicious orphan friends. This is a really, really, really interesting game. Everything is pretty much done in the form of a puzzle game on the right-hand side of your Switch's screen. And you can either, you know, use the directional pad or touchscreen. Clearly, because it's a puzzle game, I just went touchscreen. And you will have a 3x, I'm trying to think how big this stage was. It's like 3x1, 2, 3, 4, a 3x6 grid.
Oh. And
when the game starts, you'll have two colored blocks appearing in that grid. As the game progresses, you'll end up getting, you know, a third color in there to make things more complex. Let's just start with the beginning, though, because your goal is to then make a minimum 2x2 block out of the two different color blocks that are there by, you know, swiping the blocks left and right and trying to line them up so that you could get a 2x2 or 3x2 or 4x2 or like 3x3. Whenever you start combining these blocks, you pretty much have to. Do you remember the game Chime?
Yes, Chime was pretty good.
How you could just make the blocks bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar to that, but you have to, you know, if it's too wide, you have to make sure that you're growing it by two on the one, whatever side is by two. Or if you want to make it wider, you're going to have to completely match it up. Like it always has to be some kind of rectangle or square shape. It can't be some fucky weird shape. But, once you have a 2x2 or 3x3, whatever block it is, you then have to either swipe it to the left off of the board or swipe it to the right off of the board.
To the left.
Well, if you swipe it to the left, it turns into a gun with ammo.
Oh. And
the bigger they are, the more ammo or the more powerful your attacks are going to be. And depending on the color of the blocks, you'll have different guns as well. You know, blue blocks might be an ice attack for igloos. Red ones are like lightning bolts, so they'll have electric attacks. They have a ton of weird, goofy, like there's a fruit gun in the game that just shoots like fucking vegetables at people. But you have to make sure to swipe them to the left to load up your three guns. You could have three guns based on where you swipe the blocks out. And then they get more powerful the more you swipe towards them. If you swipe to the right, it stores them as special attacks. So, you know, the previously mentioned lightning gun, once you could use the gun, if you use it as a special ability instead, it's like a one-time use, a giant lightning bolt comes down and just attacks everything in its line, and then it moves off to the left, attacking everything on the way. There's just a ton of different weird, goofy abilities in the game that come down to whatever color tiles you're working with. And it comes down to like trying to plan out, do I want to use this as a weapon? Do I want to use this as a special weapon? Do I want to build and make this bigger? Because when you're doing the puzzle stuff, you usually only have about 20 to 30 seconds to work with what you've got there. And then the door closes and then it's tower defense.
That sounds like a fun concept to me.
It's really, really unique and cool. Enemies will come in from the left. Waves are fairly quick because it's meant to, like, all of your weapons and all of your abilities are one use. That is it.
Oh, the weapons are too?
Yes. So once you use a weapon based on what it is, it'll go through its full attack mode and then it'll disintegrate. That's why the rounds are fairly quick, so as soon as you use your weapons, you jump back in, make new blocks, re-equip weapons, and use them again. Same with the special abilities. And it's basically survive as long as you can with, you know, the health you're given, with your orphans, when you kill enemies, they'll drop money that you want to try and collect, and you can use those to not only unlock new weapon types. Like, when you start out, you only have, I think, ice, dragon, and what the fuck was the third? I don't know. There was a third one. And as you earn money, you can unlock the other weapon types, like lightning, like the fruit gun. Like, just, there, I think there's 10 different ones in total, 10 or 12. And it comes down to trying to figure out what weapons you enjoy, what abilities you enjoy, saving up, unlocking them, leveling them up. You can also use the money to purchase more hearts for yourself, which is your health. When enemies attack you, you lose health. When you attack enemies and kill them, you'll gain health back. So as long as you're always killing enemies, you're doing pretty good. You don't have to worry too much about dying. You got to worry more about being able to create these blocks, because if you get a bad block layout and you can't get any of the larger blocks together, you're not going to have any weapons, or you're not going to have any special attacks, and you'll kind of be fucked, since defense requires a solid offense in these games.
So basically, this is, would you say, given the nature of the game, that there is a certain level of resource management in the puzzle play, or is it just break blocks as fast as you can and burn them out?
Well, you're not really breaking anything. You're just swiping them left and right.
Well, that's what I mean, though. Like, you have to make the combinations that in normal puzzle games would break them, but instead, in this game, once you make the combo, you're swiping them.
Yeah.
So I just mean, like, are you basically, the gimmick is just not so much resource conservation, but as get rid of this, just match and swipe as much as possible with the time you got.
Yes, it's more about getting as much ammo and as much power into your special attacks and into your weapons as possible, so that you could survive the oncoming wave of however many enemies show up. The other really enjoyable thing with this game is the art style. Everything has, like, colored pencil, sketchbook, really, really cool visual style to it. Very cartoonish, outlandish, bright colors. It's just a really, really cool, it looks like something that you and your friends may have designed in, like, high school art class to kill time. Like, pyramids with fucking happy faces on them, ice cream truck weapons with, you know, hot air balloons made up of monster face. It's really outlandish, cool visual style, and it looks great on the Switch.
Oh, starting to sound like you might be trying to put this as a buy, man. Sounding pretty good.
My verdict on it, $15, I'm going to give it a very recommended try it. The only thing holding it from being an all-out buy it is just the fact that it's such a weird combination of genres that not everyone is going to get into this.
Oh.
Like, if you're not a fan of puzzle games, I don't think this game is going to change your mind.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, this sounds like, if you like puzzle games, give it a shot. If you like tower defense games, but give it a shot in the sense that it's a little different, but it still features something that you like.
Yeah. And if you like puzzle games and tower defense games, this is an absolute buy it, because it is batshit crazy, beautiful game, very fun, very addictive. Even the description says that you could play it forever. So,
I see, when I looked it up real quick, too, while you were talking about it, there's one thing you definitely should mention, because I think it would be an added notch to the belt. It's got Music by Disaster Piece in it.
Yes, it does.
That makes me really want it, too, because his music is really good.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I knew I wanted to talk about something else with the game, and, you know, I'm old and dumb. So
we're getting old!
But yeah, that Disaster Piece soundtrack is really, really good as well. So if you played Fez, you like the music in there, definitely check this out. Yeah, it's really good stuff. Did you have any questions about it, since you're looking up the game?
I guess, is there, like, any sense of, like, progression? Because I got the gist that it's infinite play. So is it like a high score you're shooting for? Is it just like, just play as far as you want to go, just for the hell of it? Like, what is the, is there a goal in mind?
It's broken up into, like, days of, like, well, you start on day one, daytime, and then day one, nighttime, day two, daytime, day two, night. It's just try to get as far as you can. The big hook bringing you back is killing the enemies, earning money, and powering up your abilities to see how much further you can go.
Okay. So it's all about just that push.
Yeah. Considering it advertises having infinite levels, it's more about just playing and seeing how far you can get instead of like any kind of hardcore set ending.
Okay. And hopefully there's like a, like, would you say there's a decent amount of enemy types and combos to make you feel like, yeah, I'm playing for a bit, but there's enough guys popping up on this screen that I'm enjoying what I'm getting out of each level.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely between the enemy types, the bosses are ridiculous, huge bosses in the game, and just, you know, making those combinations and seeing what kind of weird weapons there are, what kind of weird special abilities there are. And when you make bigger combinations and you have bigger attacks, see how ridiculous they can get. Like, one attack, it might shoot out, like, a tiny little stream of fireballs is your weapon. But if you power it up a lot more, you have bigger blocks and more ammo with it, it's like gigantic swirling fire tornadoes that just crash into people, and they're awesome. Wow.
So that's a huge leap in change. That's a large change up in gameplay or firepower. So
yeah, it's really, really cool stuff. So if you are a fan of tower defense and puzzle games, this is absolutely worth checking out.
Oh man, here I was trying to get through a backlog.
I just made it bigger, didn't I?
I think you did. Damn it. That's not how this was supposed to go.
Oh, well, you know where things are going to go, though?
Oh, where?
They're going to take a quick break. We're going to listen to a quick Viking Guitar song, and then we're going to be back talking with Eric and Ryan of Viking Guitar Live, chatting about their time at MAGFest, chatting about Ryan's work with Lonely Rolling Stars as well, how it differs from, you know, Eric doing songs by himself to working with a full band. Last episode when Grant was on, he mentioned doing a Viking Guitar acoustic set.
Oh.
So we're going to touch on that a little bit more as well. It's a really fun chat. So Purnell, you should stick around and listen to that one.
Don't mind if I do.
But, that is it for the reviews here. Purnell, do you have any final words to end this?
Happy New Year, folks. Get some sleep.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. I am joined by two fantastic guests right now. Viking Guitar, Mega Beardo, welcome to the show with your glorious facial hair. How are you guys doing today?
I'm great.
just beautiful. I mean, it's Saturday. Yeah. Things are wonderful. You're back from MAGFest. You had an awesome show there. How the fuck are you doing? Let make some noise if you feel good.
I've had the flu for the entire week, so I'm still struggling a little bit, but I'm feeling pretty good today.
Oh, the Grant flu?
Yeah, yeah. Ryan's down to a svelte 70 pounds right now.
But Eric,
it was 60 degrees yesterday, and then we got 6 inches of snow last night, so I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, seriously, what the hell is, like, we had 60s yesterday, and I went to bed, and it was just sleet and ice and shit outside.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is going on?
Where are you located, Joe?
I am in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. So you're close.
Yeah, I'm the opposite side of the state as Ryan.
Okay. Well, you're still closer than I am. I'm over in Santa Cruz, California, and it's a chilly 50 degrees out right now.
Yeah, fuck you. Oh, so Eric, this is your first time on the show. Welcome to the show. Yes. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. I'm doing pretty well, actually. I had you know how MAGFest is. It's just a whirlwind of positive vibes for the most part, and coming back from that to, you know, whatever day to day life is with the day job and stuff is always a little bit of a punch in the dick. But I've been, you know, I've got some musical projects I've been working on already, and planning a couple trips to see some friends and stuff. And so the legendary post mag depression has been mitigated somewhat. It's not gone, but it's kind of kept in its place.
Yeah, I remember the days when post mag depression was a very real thing, and I don't know if I've been going to enough of them that I've just kind of, I don't know, gotten used to it, or if just life in general has crushed my soul enough that I don't feel pain anymore.
There's no discerning between the post-mag depression and just the general overbearing sense of terribleness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How anyway.
Oh, yeah. No, that's it. End of the podcast. It's been great talking.
Yeah. That was a good interview. Music this episode. Oh man, so you guys were at MAGFest. You hired Beardo to be one of your hired guns for Viking Guitar Live. Tell me about the show.
Well, let me clarify first off a little bit. Beardo and Grant and Adam and Dan Taylor, you know, now Chunk Style for the last year or two. We're all, I don't know, it's called Viking Guitar Live, and it's mostly, you know, previous music I've arranged, but, I feel very strongly that this project requires these specific people, you know. We've had some lineup changes before, and that's gotten swapped out, but, I very much feel that this is a group project for all of us. And, the hired gun thing is not entirely accurate, but, anyway, now that I've stood on my soapbox about that for a moment. The show went great.
I just honestly thought at this point, Ryan and Grant are legally required to be in any new band that comes out.
I know, right? Yeah.
That's how it feels.
My experience with MAG started with Viking Guitar Live. So it's because of Eric that I'm now kind of involved with everything, to be completely honest. So
wow.
Sorry. I'm loving it. Yeah.
I didn't know that. I really didn't know that.
Yeah, my first mag was playing with Viking Guitar Live, and I've been basically going ever since, but kind of because of my involvement with Eric and Eric kind of introducing me to everybody in the scene, that kind of, you know, got me the fever. And
and now you're an addict.
That's history. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Happily an addict.
MAGFest addict, which is the best kind of addict to be, MAGFest.
It's expensive sometimes, but the show went great. It was kind of an interesting year for us because, you know, like you said, you know, Grant and Ryan are both in other bands also, and our drummer Adam was going to sit in on a song with the Lonely Rolling Stars Vince DiCola set, and we live in totally different places in the country. And so, you know, we tend to rely on having some time to practice as a band at the event before the show. And that's always, you know, we've been very lucky about that going well for us. You know, our first performance at MAG for 2014, or I forget what number it was, 12, I think. But, we only practiced once in the hotel room as a full band before we did the show. And it fucking ended up working somehow. So, anyway, you know, coming into this one, you know, I had a little bit of stress about how many obligations everyone had and how kind of spread out and busy we were going to be. And, you know, Lonely Rolling Stars with Ryan, they had two full sets to practice and all these logistical things with Vince getting to the hotel and everything. But it went great. You know, we did our first practice on Thursday, and we all walked out of there going, you know, if this had been the performance, you know, fuck it, that would have been great. And then we got another one in that Grant left because he was vomiting. But, you know, he, we had enough time where Ryan and I split up his guitar parts, thinking, okay, let's just assume he's going to be cold and dead in 2 hours from now when we have to do the show. And, but he fucking pulled through, you know, and he had another set he had to perform afterwards, and he got up there and he kicked ass, and we had a trash can set up behind his Marshall in case he had to go Ralph, but he didn't.
Yeah, last episode he was on the show, which is funny that he was on just a post Magfest show, but he skips out on this one. But
yeah,
he was mentioning the Grant cleanup kit that was just waiting for him.
Always prepared.
Which, yeah. Funny enough, we were told by Paul Good, who helps her on Magfest, one of the guys in charge, that apparently there were talks to bring Gwar in.
Oh, what?
How amazing would that have been, where people are concerned about whether or not Grant might throw up on the crowd, and if Gwar was there, there really would be someone vomiting on the crowd.
That's wow. Yeah, that's very much a thing to do the last year with the contract with the Gaylord. Because I don't see anyone being allowed to come back after that.
No. Well, this is our last year at the Gaylord. Let's burn these fucking bridges down.
show went well. Mag went well. You know. Well, so who is that? Who's creaking?
I'm trying to get my dog inside. get in here. Let's go. Come on. He's trying to get me to go play in the snow.
Well, why don't you go play in the snow on the phone?
Because I'm not wearing pants or shoes or socks.
Excuses.
Beard.
Yeah, you're sufficiently warm with a beard on your face, right?
Yeah, that's the one part of my body. What, Briscoe? Come on now. We're both having a good time. Get in here. Come on.
So, Joe, I have a question for you.
Let's hear it.
Of the performances you saw this year at MAG, I'm just trying to cover the dog barking. there were a bunch of bands that have played there before, but I know for me at least, there were some I'd never heard of before. So were there any concerts you caught that were new and or surprising and or things you were stoked about that you weren't expecting?
No, not really, because I've gotten to the point where I've been to so many Magfests. I was there for two concerts this year, and I saw both of them.
So, and those were
You Guys and Lonely Rolling Stars.
Oh, you know, if it. You only had to pick two, I think that's a that's a great thing.
I figure I've been to so many Magfests. I'm not there for the show anymore. I'm there for my friends. So I wanted to make sure that I saw you guys and that I saw Lonely Rolling Stars, and that was covered.
Well, perfect. Thank you.
And appreciate Vince, that. Of course, but I kind of lumped that in with Lonely Rolling Stars.
Yeah, you get more bang for your buck with the LRS show this year than almost any other concert at the convention. So
seriously, how good was that? That friggin' Vince DiCola was at Magfest, and apparently, like a week and a half after having a fucking heart attack.
Yes.
Yeah. The guy's a fucking trooper, man.
That is insane.
Yeah, we were doing our Viking guitar practice and just talking about what else had to get done. And, you know, Ryan was talking about Lonely Rolling Stars practice and, you know, when Vince was going to show up and, you know, mentioned like, yeah, you know, it turns out he had a heart attack a week and a half ago. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? And he's like, he's still coming.
Like, I didn't know any of that stuff until he told the story on stage during their show. And, you know, Grant wants to complain that, oh, his tummy sore. Motherfucker, he almost died, and he made it to Magfest, and Grant has to bitch about needing Pepto because gurgles in my stomach.
You know what? Grant's a super tall guy, and any gastroesophageal pain is like most of his body.
Fair point. Very fair point. Oh, man. So you mentioned Viking Guitar Live, all musicians from around the country. It feels like Magfest has kind of become a breeding ground for the supergroup type of performances at Magfest, seemingly dating back to the days of the Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Were you guys ever around to see the Smash Brothers at all?
No, I haven't, but I, you know, I'm very aware of them. I know George and I know, you know, Sean, and I've met Jake a few times, and, you know, so it, I've heard about how, you know, the Smash Brothers process of getting there and just making it happen.
It seems you guys are just carrying on that tradition, along with only Rolling Stars, so Ryan, you're carrying it on twice, of just these groups of friends from around the country who are like, you know what? We don't normally play together, but once a year or twice a year, we're just going to come together and it's going to magically go amazing.
And how thus they were jinxed.
But how the hell does that work? How do you guys practice with each other, you know, without being around each other?
Well, Ryan might actually be a better one to answer this one, because I've only ever done this in the context of VGL, and I know he's had a couple of, you know, you've done Lonely Rolling Stars also, and, you know, what do you think about it? And then I'll add my two cents.
So, you know, basically you have to practice a lot on your own. So both VGL and LRS has, you know, our practice tracks or stuff that we haven't recorded, or we have the actual recorded tracks that we can play along to, and just basically making sure that you have all of your parts memorized, you know? So when you show up day or, you know, weekend of the show, you all get together for the first time and you kind of knock off some rust, and you find out that it's much different practicing together than it is to a perfectly metronomed practice track, you know? So it's a little different, especially because in the context of a hotel room practice, you have a drummer who is playing on a paper plate and a cardboard box and doing cymbal crashes with his mouth and stuff like that. So it's a little different in that sense. And I will say there was the first time we went through the Vince DiCola set without Vince. Vince had not showed up yet. But we decided to do it as LRS just without him to see how far we could get. And we did not get very far at all, because for some reason that missing element of Vince just needed to be there. So I remember thinking when we started to go through that stuff, I'm like, oh man, we are fucked. it wasn't clicking. Like, we went through the LRS stuff pretty well for the first time. I'm like, all right, we can make that work. But then the Vince stuff happened. I'm like, oh man, this didn't gel quite as much as we had hoped. But we didn't have time to go through it anymore until we got together with Vince. And the first song we practiced with Vince was the Unicron theme, and we fucking nailed it, just like right out the gate. And we all let out this collective yell of just excitement because it sounded so good. So that was kind of one of those instances where you needed everybody there. You needed every single part there to make it work. And I think that might be kind of unique to that band. And it's probably opposite with Viking Guitar Live, because I'm remembering we've had practices probably without one member or two members, just to kind of go through some parts. Like Eric and I would practice guitar harmonies together and stuff like that. So, it's kind of different for both bands for different reasons, I would say.
One of the other things with Viking Guitar is that, you know, we play with a full 5-person band whenever we have the opportunity to, but, Grant lives out, you know, pretty close to me. He's about 15-minute drive away. And, he and I play a number of shows as Viking Guitar Light with, just he and I in a backing track. And then on top of that, you know, I sometimes play solo shows just with myself in a backing track. So, you know, Grant and I at least have kind of a running level of familiarity with the songs, even if the full band hasn't played together in a year or two. And I think that certainly helps. The downside to that, though, is that, you know, when in a solo show context, or if I'm playing with Grant, you know, we with only two people on stage, we want to be doing the flashiest stuff to, you know, have the best performance for everyone. And so, you know, the parts of the songs I play solo aren't entirely the same as the parts of the song I play with Grant, and those aren't entirely the same as the parts of the songs I play when the full band plays. You know, like there are a few extended solos in our Golden Axe song, for example, and you know, when it's just Grant or I, or just I play both of those, but then with the full band, Ryan plays them. So part of it for me is, it's not just about, you know, getting locked in with the other guys, but remembering, you know, what fucking version of the song am I playing this time?
I was just going to say, how do you keep all of those different performances straight?
you just practice and get used to it. I mean, it, like the first time I was, running through stuff for this show, for the full band show, it's the first time we'd played as a band since March, which really isn't too short of a gap for us. The longest one we had was 2 years, I think. But, wow. Anyway, I set up my laptop and I practice in my fucking car on my lunch break if I need to, you know, just to find time. And, we got to that second solo and I started playing it. I'm like, wait, nope, Ryan's going to be doing this. So it's just going over it and, you know, practicing in the context of specifically what you're doing and not just, you know, not just listening to the song and refamiliarizing yourself with the changes, but, you know, okay, what am I actually doing in this case?
So that's really cool.
Yeah. But the VGL practices have always been, pretty straightforward. I've played, Ryan and I both have played in a number of bands in the past. And, at least for me, you know, before this band, I kind of given up on playing in bands because I, you know, there are a lot of things I don't like about it. And I find, unnecessarily, you know, obstructive and prohibitive. You know, you have guys that, you know, they don't fucking show up or they haven't practiced or, you know, they're getting loaded on, you know, on a break and then they can't fucking perform or, you know, just all that shit. Outside of just the normal, you know, it's hard to find three or four other guys that like the same music and have a complimentary schedule and have some level of talent and equipment, all that stuff. It was when the decision was made to try and start a band to play the Viking Guitar stuff live. I knew it was only going to, you know, primarily be in the context of these larger events where everyone would be. And knowing that allowed me to reach out to the specific people I wanted instead of, you know, kind of constraining myself to, well, you know, who's within driving distance of me.
Yeah.
And that is something I'm just always grateful for is that I picked the people that I wanted. And, as a result, there's been so much less headache with this band than literally any other musical group I have ever performed with. You know, we all show up, everyone knows their shit. You know, if there are questions, we deal with it in, you know, kind of a structured fashion. And, you know, these are all guys that you know, that have professional jobs and, you know, kind of, I think, bring some of that mentality to it, you know, where I feel like we definitely have fun with it. And, you know, we're telling dick jokes and stuff. But at the same point, like, you know, we know how to, like, okay, we have an hour to do this. We have X amount of work that has to get done. We go through it and we then isolate what needs work. And it's very efficient and I like it. And it just has always worked well. And we've been doing this for 4 or 5 years now. So
nice.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
How do you go about picking set lists? Are you the one who picks the tracks most of the time? Or is it like everyone gets to pick a couple of favorites?
Well, it, you know, I mean, the first level is what can we not play live? There are a couple of songs where, and we try to avoid this, but where there's just so much overdubbing on the, you know, some of the records, especially when we were picking the stuff for the first album from, you know, the earlier material we had all recorded individually, you know. When I recorded some of the earlier Viking Guitar songs, I had never had any intention of playing it live. So there's, you know, like six guitar harmonies and all this shit. And so right off the bat, you cut all that stuff. There's at least one song that was written by primarily by Travis Morgan, who was our previous bassist, that we've kind of retired out of respect for, you know, it's his song. But from there, you know, we usually have some sort of open dialogue. You know, the nice thing about playing shows so far out is that we have time to plan for this stuff. And so, you know, we've got our little Facebook group and, you know, one of us will open a dialogue about, well, you know, this is our set list time. What do you guys think? Does anyone have stuff you definitely want to play or not want to play? And usually right off the bat, a few of us say, I don't want to fucking play Ninja Gaiden 2 ever again. because that is a hard song. And then from there, you know, usually with that, I'll propose a set list and we'll refine it a bit and go from there. It's usually, you know, pretty straightforward. There have never been any arguments thus far. So
give it time.
Yeah, give it time.
What about you, Ryan? What songs do you enjoy playing or what songs are you going to throw a fit about not playing?
Let's see. I think my favorites of the VGL set, Mega Man X2 used to not really be one for some reason, but now I love it, and I think it's a great opener. So I'm glad we opened up with that one. It's just a nice little, you know, 6-7 minute ass kicker. And it's just like nonstop solos, and then it's also heavy as shit. That one's a lot of fun to play. And I also like the... Sorry, my cat just stepped on the piano. the Secret of Mana track, because it's a nice dip in dynamics a little bit. So you start off with the fast and heavy shit, and you dip it down, and you go a little, you know, slow. It's got a lot of clean stuff. So those two stick out to me. Obviously, I'm a big fan of the Castlevania 4 stuff, so I hope we keep playing that one. That one's fun.
I think we've played that one every time we've played as a band. I think that's the only song that's made it through every set.
I think so.
Yeah.
Is that going to be your free bird?
Oh, don't even, man.
We specifically asked to not play Ninja Gaiden 2 this time because, you know, we played it the last time we played Mag, and it went surprisingly well. Like, we pretty much nailed it, but it's just, it's too much. It's way too much.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Eric.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to step over you. Yeah, there's a lot of, like, specific weird timed guitar harmonies and things that really don't sound too hard but are... A little more acrobatic from a fingering standpoint. It's just like every time I play that song, whether it's at home or, you know, we recorded it for the new album recently, just like every time it's done, I'm like, oh, thank God I fucking did it, you know? And, you know, for me, I think Ryan and I both, you know, we have a lot of emphasis on the performance aspect of a stage show. You know, I mean, playing the right notes as Pingo from Vic Viper would say, you know, that's certainly important. But we want to be able to play the right stuff and have it sound good and not fuck up too bad and still be able to be putting on a good, visual performance for the crowd, you know? And, you know, Ryan and I in a lot of the songs end up taking, from a guitar standpoint, at least the more challenging aspects. And, we could crank out Ninja Gaiden. Like if we had decided we wanted to play it at this mag, I'm sure we could have, but it would have been a lot more of us standing there kind of looking at the fretboard and a lot less of us, you know, headbanging and jumping around and all that stuff. So,
but you could pull it off. It just wouldn't be as showy.
And we have pulled it off before, you know. It's just it requires a level of attention that I think, you know, and I mean, people seem to like that song, so I can't really say for sure, but I think that the general response to our shows is better when we have more energy and when we're you know, kind of doing the, you know, the rock star thing on stage a bit more. So,
you know, when Grant's not throwing up on people.
You know, Grant fucking pulled it out for this, man. Like, I watched the video of it, and I couldn't tell he was sick. He really brought it, and I have a lot of respect for the guy, man.
Like, I legitimately didn't know he was that sick until everyone was back for MAGFest blaming Grant for being sick. He hit it so well.
Yeah.
When he said he had to stop practicing and go to sleep, we knew he was in a rough spot.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, he doesn't do that. Yeah. But
I will say, as difficult as Ninja Gaiden 2 is, and as much as we complain about playing it live, there are probably 3 or 4 Lonely Rolling Star songs that are like absolutely unplayable.
Which ones and why?
Because Norg arranged them for the most part. So Milkshake is obviously unplayable. They've proven that before I even joined the band. But then this new album had Shovel Knight, Solstice, and Chris's arrangement for Gauntlet also proved to be unplayable. So it's just a lot of like finger, like it's the same thing with Ninja Gaiden 2, but like
exponential on crack.
Works. Yeah. It's just like a lot of these like arpeggios and like a lot of weird finger patterns that don't make any sense on a guitar fretboard. Cause Solstice was obviously not designed to be played on guitar at all. And I would say maybe the same thing for Gauntlet, the way Chris arranged it. But So, the, like, for that set list, that was obviously, all right, these four songs we obviously will not even remotely try to play ever and ever. So, you know, that was kind of an easy set list to put together. We actually kind of purposely took it easy on the Lonely Rolling Stars set because we knew we had the Vince set to prepare for. That one's kind of a more, it's not that it's difficult to play physically, it's just a lot of mental gymnastics. Vince does a lot of time signature changes and key changes, and there's a lot of count ins that you have to remember, like this count in goes from 4/4 into 6/4, and then it's so the logistics for that were kind of different, so we tried to concentrate more on the Vince stuff than the LRS stuff. So we kind of purposely did some of the easier, more laid back Lonely Rolling Stars songs, which worked out. I will say a lot of people were very impressed with the Death of Optimus Prime arrangement that Vince had done. And
was that the one that had Sound of Silence in there also?
Yes. Okay. So, so we had basically we had had Vince choose whatever he wanted to play. We did suggest that we play Escape because George particularly loves that one a lot. So Vince did include that one in the set, but he wanted to play Death of Optimus Prime from the very beginning. And that's totally understandable because that's a huge theme for a lot of people. And then maybe, I don't know, 2.5, maybe 3 weeks before the show, he's like, "Hey guys, I did a new arrangement for Death of Optimus Prime. And now it's like 6 minutes long."
Oh, okay. Lord.
Yeah, so before it was like the arrangement was Vince, Chris, a little bit of George, and a little bit of Chuck. So Sean and I were going to get a little bit of a break. And then with the new arrangement, it was like a full band, this epic dynamic buildup. I'm like, oh man, now we got to play on a song. We don't get that break anymore. but when I heard the arrangement for the first time, because George was like, just wait till you fucking hear this thing, guys. So Vince had come up with this thing in his head and just like immediately put out sheet music and a MIDI arrangement for it, and it sounded phenomenal. We're like, okay, now I'm getting. So that was one of those things where like kind of a last minute things changed a little bit, but it completely worked out, because I would say that's probably the most memorable song from that set.
I may have looked around during that song and seen a couple of watery eyes in the crowd.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Yep, there was a lot of that, and I was fighting back tears myself during that song. So that was that's a big one for a lot of people.
How did it feel playing that with Vince?
Overwhelming at times, because not only am I a Transformers guy, but I'm a big Rocky guy, and this may be a completely unpopular opinion, but Rocky IV is the worst of the Rocky series in my opinion, but it has the best score, and that's all Vince. So to be able to play two tracks from that was just fucking mind blowing. I could not believe it, just as much as the Transformers stuff. But yeah, just being like, even practicing with them was just completely surreal. Like, I couldn't believe what was happening.
Was there like an extra level of excitement being what a huge movie buff you are? Because I've seen your house, I've seen your little movie room down in the basement. I know what kind of a movie guy you are. Was it just that much more exciting and awesome?
Yeah. Because like I said, a big Rocky guy, so I've probably watched that series more than just about any other film series that I've seen. So to be able to play, because we even played a little bit of the Rocky theme that tails the end of the war theme from Rocky IV. So kind of tying all of that together, it made the 1987 version of me very, very, very happy. Because like if you were to like take a snapshot of 1987 for me, it's like me in my Ultra Magnus pajamas watching Rocky IV and Transformers on my VCR. So kind of brought it full circle for me.
Man, the late 80s were an awesome time.
Yes, they were.
Memories.
Yeah. it's kind of interesting for me, because I was not a Transformers guy growing up. It's not that I didn't like it, I just didn't watch it. And the Rocky stuff too. I wasn't. I was watching Super Mario Brothers Super Show personally.
There you go.
Nice.
it just, you know how it is. You just end up like not there, especially in the greater mag scene and nerd culture in general. As you know, you have people that are super into specific franchises or, you know, IPs or whatever you want to call them. And, you know, obviously not everyone is into all of them. And Transformers was one I just missed the boat on. And I didn't watch the Rocky movies until probably within the last 15 years. And so, you know, you're going to fucking hate me for this, Ryan, but, you know, when I saw the whole thing that, like, yeah, we're playing with Vince DiCola, I'm like, all right. And I read through to the bottom. I'm like, oh, that's who he is. Okay.
That's the guy. Okay. Got it.
You know, but that being said, you know, I also in shows, I you know, I like to rock out when I'm in the audience and stuff, but I like to sit there and or stand there or whatever and kind of just, you know, not criticize, but critique it, you know, because I'm always trying to look for things I can do better, you know, from a musical standpoint or performance standpoint or any of that stuff. So all this is to say is I didn't have the emotional foundation for this stuff that I think a lot of the people there did. And also I was kind of in the mindset of, I just want to look at this and see how it goes. And with all that, I still got really emotional during all of it. Like it's strong, powerful music. And the human side of it, of seeing everyone on stage with Vince, and it was just palpable how incredibly important it was to these people up there. And these are all like good friends of mine, you know, and you know, like George and Ryan in particular, I feel like I know pretty well. And it, you know, you could see it in their faces and you could feel it from the crowd, and just, you know, people next to me were starting to tear up and stuff. And it just, the whole thing was, it was really a cool thing, you know? And I think it kind of goes back to a larger, kind of theme with this convention in particular and this community at large, which is that, you know, there's a sense of camaraderie and, togetherness that I've really never felt anywhere else. Especially not on this scale. And at the risk of sounding cheesy, it overcomes barriers and differences and boundaries and all that stuff. And someone like myself who walked into this with literally no predisposition to anything more than, okay, I'm going to watch a concert. You get carried away in it, and it's really a cool thing. And, you know, as an extension of that, we all go back to our normal lives across the country and, you know, across the world for a lot of people. And I like to think that, you know, we kind of bring some of that with us, and it helps us, you know, get through hard times, and also helps us interact with other people in our daily lives in a way that, hopefully is just kind of moving a general sense of, neighborliness and goodwill, you know. And I am not a wooshy hippie sort of guy at all, but like the concert, the LRS Vince DiCola concert, it kind of symbolized something really cool for me. So I was super happy just to get to experience it from that capacity. And I can't even imagine how strong it would have felt for, you know, George and Ryan and people that were, you know, much more closely tied emotionally to it.
Yeah. It's not often that MAGFest has something so powerful and emotional happening during a show. It's normally, you know, just an over the top fun time. And
yeah,
it seemed everyone felt a little more grounded and together during that set.
Yeah. Yeah. I would certainly agree with that.
Yeah. And especially in the context of him, you know, with his health troubles over, because that happened like pretty much right around Christmas. So I think in the context of all that and just how everything just kind of magically came together, and it just, yeah, it was a big, big moment for that weekend for sure.
It was a Christmas miracle.
Yeah. I will say that, and I don't want to speak completely for Vince, but I, you know, at least talking with him before and after the show, because he didn't really have, I don't think, the proper expectations for how much his music meant to a lot of the people that go to MAG. Like, he's used to going to BotCons and stuff like that and performing there for people that know him for the Transformers stuff. So he knows that he'll perform well there for that type of crowd, but he wasn't sure how he'd do for the video game music crowd. And we assured him, we said, believe me, there's a lot of overlap. And he's like, all right. And then after the show, he's like, that was the most incredible crowd that I've ever played for. Like, he he was just so happy that he has that much of a reach. I don't think he quite understood or grasped just how broad of a reach his music has. So he
and really how important really it is
time.
Too.
Yeah, exactly. So he had such a great time at MAGFest, and he's already asking, like, I want to come back. I'm ready to come back. So he had a really good time. He had a really good time at Jam Space too.
I think that's everybody's first words when they're home from MAGFest is, when is MAGFest?
Yeah.
Yeah. How many days left? We need to set up a counter website, Ryan. I'm sure that would get some traffic.
How many days till MAGFest?
Yeah.
Is it MAGFest yet? No. There's many days until MAGFest.
Oh, is that? They do have that, don't they?
I'll do the end of that one.
I think I remember seeing a "Is it MAGFest yet?" no website at some point. That must be where I'm taking this from.
Possible. I don't know. Yeah. If not, we got to get on that.
We're all secondary innovators. You know, it's funny. Just going back real quick to the whole talking about, like, oh, Ninja Gaiden is so hard to play and stuff. And it's like, I'm thinking about it, and it's like, you have people like fucking Danimal and Mike Willard and stuff that are, you know, God forbid they hear us talking about this, you know, because it's like, oh, I'm sorry, guys. You don't want to play something too difficult and worry about not rocking out. And they're bouncing all over the place, just fucking shredding all the time. So if Mike, Dan, if you are listening to this, just know we say it out of total awareness of not being at your level.
So my first mag when VGL played, you know, and I was, you know, worried about the, you know, oh, these songs are too hard, but you gotta still have it, you know, have that stage presence and everything else. And then I saw Arm Cannon, I'm like, well, fuck. What the hell? I remember looking at Eric and like Mike was just going nuts and Kubosh was just shredding and Dan shredding and everybody's fucking shredding. I'm like, what is going on?
Like, what do you want from me, man?
Yeah. Mike's sweeping shit that we could never sweep and he's fucking singing like a bird while he's doing it.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, enough of that. Oh, whatever, man. Fuck Arm Cannon. I hate them.
Oh, man. I'm gonna try steering things back to Viking Guitar for a second. Surfside Graveyard had to be one of the highlights, not only from the live show, but from the new album. For some reason, I just really, really get into unique songs like this where, you know, God, I can't talk right now. with Surfside Graveyard, how it's pretty much like surf plus metal. Or if you look back at the Tiberian Suns with Swingylvania, how it's swing plus metal. I love these fusing, the fusing of these multiple genres into the just these heavy takes on a genre you wouldn't think you would hear.
Well,
ramble too much with that.
No, that's fine. I think that's kind of an interesting song to talk about because, like, I grew up primarily as a metalhead, but, you know, I'm in California. I live, you know, in Santa Cruz, which, you know, let me just put it this way. Santa Cruz and another, I think it was Huntington Beach, had a lawsuit against each other as to who could call themselves Surf City USA.
Really?
Which is just the stupidest shit. But regardless, that just kind of paints the backdrop of, you know, Santa Cruz is into surfing and I'm not. I'm a pasty nerd and I just played video games all the time. I don't go to the, you know, into the ocean. But anyway, I grew up, you know, with that culture around. And then as, you know, as I got more into music as a teenager and stuff, you know, I started listening to some surf stuff, the instrumental stuff. And Anthrax, the band, has, not the disease, but the band, has a cover of the Pipeline song, you know, the dun 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 do 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 do, you know, this classic surf standard. And they did a thrash metal version of it, and that was pretty influential to me, you know, when I was like 15 or whatever. Because, you know, surf and thrash have a lot of similarities, you know. They're from different eras and they have different, you know, tone sets, obviously, but it's very energetic and there's a lot of, kind of aggressive, fast guitar work. And there's a strong attitude to both of them. And so I, you know, that kind of got me more interested in instrumental surf music. And then I don't know if, I don't think I've talked about this, but the, you know, my intro to the VGM scene in general, kind of was from Dwelling of Duels. And, this whole, I had taken a couple of years off of doing music because of a career change and stuff, and, wanted to get back into it. And I'm like, I'm rusty as fuck. I need to do something that doesn't matter. I'm like, well, before I work on my, my big important music project, my own album that everyone's going to care about, I'll just do some video game covers to shake the rust off. And, in the course of that, started thinking about, you know, there was some month around, October where I was doing a song, and I'm like, I want to do like a Halloween themed song. And this was probably the idea that eventually grew into the Danse Macabre album series. But, I'm like, I want to do a surf horror song. And so the first one I did was, Evening of the Undead from Zombies Ate My Neighbors. And I did that as a kind of laid back instrumental surf one. And then the next year around the same time, I did, Surfside Graveyard, which has now been adapted to the full band. So that song was first recorded, I want to say back in 2009. And, I love it. I think it goes great in the set. It's, it changes the energy level. You know, people can kind of take a break from, you know, from just pure blast beats all the time. And it's still, it's energetic and fun. And it lets us, you know, kind of be goofy. You know, I mean, not that we're ever not goofy on stage, but, you know, it's nice to do it in a context of something that's obviously kind of, you know, we love it, but it's also kind of a joke. You know, we toss on the stupid sunglasses and stuff and do the Frankenstein walk across the stage and everything. So, yeah, I'm glad people like that. It's one that I'm always, I feel like I usually get good feedback on it. And every time I'm surprised, because it feels like it kind of stands out as, you know, kind of, I never know how people are going to respond to it, even though they tend to like it, it seems like. So.
Nice. That's really cool. What other genres do you think you could see yourself, meddling with, kind of like Surfside Graveyard or like, Swinglevania?
Well, I mean, you mean in the context of Viking Guitar Live?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Could we see a metal polka song next?
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, some of it is limited by our instrumentation, you know, because we, you know, we have three guitars, bass and drums, and it's not to say that, you know, that precludes us from attempting certain genres, but it does make some easier than others. You know, surf is a pretty direct translation because it's, you know, it's the same instrument setup as a rock band in a lot of cases. You know, a lot of swing stuff and similar things, it, you know, it really does benefit from having horns or, you know, synthy keyboard stuff. And we don't play to a backing track when we play with the full band. So, I mean, you know, Ryan and I, you know, have both done, you know, some amount of composing for, you know, on a contract basis. And I, you know, just personally, I write music in a lot of different genres, and I've, you know, had, music in different genres in games and other things like that. But the Viking Guitar Live stuff, I'm probably going to keep it mostly metal centric. There's no lack of metal bands in the VGM scene and good metal bands. But with a few exceptions, I think that we, one of the things I've tried to push for to make us stand out is to really go heavier than some of the other ones. And that's not to say better. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to imply that, oh yeah, we're fucking heavy as shit out there. You know, it's just that, you know, there's a bunch of people, and you need to kind of find a way to make yourself stand out and delineate yourself from the other groups. And one of the ways we've done that is by, you know, introducing more, you know, death metal and thrash metal elements than some other bands do. And I think that it's fun to have other genres and other things to kind of pepper in some different flavor. But at the same point, I really do, you know, to some extent want an undiluted opinion where if, you know, if our name comes up in conversation of VGM, you know, I want the first thing people to think of is, oh, they're that heavy metal band, you know? So who knows? You know, albums are different, obviously. We can fuck around with that. And, you know, we have recording technology to, you know, kind of overcome some of the barriers that might be, you know, present for our instrument setup. But for the live shows, we tend to set it up with a lot of our heavy material with, you know, recognizable melodies, and then have a song or two, depending on how long the set is, to kind of just give the audience a chance to take a little bit of an energy break and get ready to, you know, to kick back in for the next one. So
does otherwise, that answer you just want to be balls out, raw, heavy, crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, we want to play heavy music too. Just falls out all the time. So, Ryan, I don't know. What are your thoughts on it? Because, you know, we've looked at a whole bunch of different arrangements, and I know you're, you know, as much of a death metal guy as I am.
Yeah. I agree that we try to stand out a little bit because there are a lot of really good heavy metal VGM acts out there. So it's a little challenging to, you know, carve your own path. You've got perhaps the heaviest band out there is probably got to be Night of the Round, I would say.
Completely. That's always who I think of when I'm like, yeah, we're a heavy metal band. So yeah.
And then they play, you're like, oh, my balls just dropped out of my anus. Okay. That's the type of heavy that they are. So you try to, I don't know. You try to blend, like Eric was saying, certain elements that kind of make you a little bit unique. So, I know we talked about doing one of my Mario 3 tracks, which is like pure fucking black metal. So maybe that might be in the future at some point. I think it's interesting to be able to blend all the sort of sub genres of metal that are out there. So thrash, black, death, blackened death, and all that stuff. We actually, I don't know if we can talk about this, Eric, but
We're going to.
Yeah, sure.
It's okay. No one's going to hear this.
Right before we performed, we had, and before Grant got violently ill.
Oh yeah, this is totally fine. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Eric had the idea of like, let's, because we'd already heard the Wily Castle theme from Mega Man 2 twice at MAG. We're like, let's play that one, but let's make a doom metal version of it. But once Grant, you know, started
dying,
we just said, okay, let's maybe not do that and just concentrate on what happens if Grant does die. So that's kind of what we're looking into, is like, oh man, okay, let's take this theme and kind of turn it completely on its head and make it, you know, just completely different than anybody else has heard. Even though there's a million metal versions of you know, Wily Castle out there, maybe nobody's done a doom metal version of it. So,
and that's, yeah, yeah, that's the type of innovation that, you know, I think we tend to do, you know, innovation being a really self-important word, but like, you know, we have another song that we haven't played as a full band, but Grant and I play it, and Chunk actually was on the recording, but it's a mashup of you know, the Kraid theme from Metroid and a instrumental Faith No More song, and that's another kind of route that I think we probably are going to look into more in the future, is blending of seemingly disparate source material into a way that, you know, hopefully is cohesive and synergistic and all that stuff.
I really like the idea of doing a drastically different new take on Wily's Castle. Like, I would love to see a band, and maybe this is what you guys could do for your next show at MAGFest, whenever that may be. Just take a bunch of songs that everybody is already playing and do them completely differently.
Well, I mean, fuck it. I might as well announce this. This is something that I've been kind of on a back burner working on for about 3 years now. Like, I have an oil painting that I commissioned that's up in my room here in my studio that's going to be the album art. But the plan for years has been to do an album called Dead Horse. And the plan is to take all this stuff that, like, you know, if you hear it somewhere, like, your first reaction is to just fucking groan, you know, like,
oh, this again.
Yeah. Wily too. And, you know, there's a bunch
Scholar's
of others.
Theme again.
Yeah. Or Bloody Tears, you know, and all that stuff. And
Green Hill Zone.
You know, Green Hill Zone, the Star Fox Corneria, you know, just all these things that, like, you know, they've kind of ended up in this situation where you hear it and your first thought is like, oh my God, I've heard this so many fucking times. But the underlying root of that is everyone covers it because they're fucking great songs, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, Wily Castle is arguably, you know, one of the most memorable, just kick-ass VGM rock tunes that's ever existed. And of course everyone covers it. And So the plan with the dead horse thing, you know, has been to just find the, you know, the prime offenders for these and redo them in some way that breathes fresh new life into them, whether that's mixing them with something, some other source tune that kind of, you know, gives it a new context, or drastically changing the genre, like doing a, you know, a doom metal version of Wiley 2 or something, or just taking something that, you know, some of these are songs that have been on VGM albums since like the, you know, the first days of the mini bosses and the Advantage and stuff, and have had already gained that status of, well, no one else is going to cover this now. And so, you know, you end up with, you know, the prime recordings of these are by these great bands, but, you know, we're done with the recording technology of like 2003. So, you know, and that's something that I'm really focused on, is I like having a really a modern, clean sounding recording. And so if nothing else, just, you know, recording a new version that just, you know, sounds like a modern metal record, or, you know, something that's cleaner than the old one. So, you know, some combination of those elements, either blending them or changing the genre or just doing a new, you know, definitive sound quality version. I don't know if I'm ever going to do it. The only reason I've been like keeping it a secret, except from a few people, for literally 3 years now. And I just haven't had the time to do it. So fuck
this
it.
Needs to happen, yeah. Man. It needs to
SML
happen.
SML exclusive announcement. The next Viking guitar project called Dead Horse will be released sometime before my death.
Like, I really want this one to happen. I love the idea. I love the name. I want to see this one happen.
Well, if anyone else releases something similar and calls it Dead Horse now, we've got the record of it being my idea, you assholes. It's my idea to cover these songs that everyone else has already thought of covering.
Completely unique idea.
Oh, A plus. Secondary innovators.
Oh, man. So what is next for you guys? What is next for Viking Guitar? What is next for Viking Guitar Live? What is next for Mega Beardo? Will we see Mega Beardo Live?
You start, Ryan.
Mega Beardo Live at MagFest or anything like a live band version?
Yeah. When are we going to see the live band version of your songs? Because Grant has Metroid Metal. Eric, you have Viking Guitar Live. Pud has Tiberian Sons. When are you going to have your own project? Ryan.
Yeah, never. Ryan.
It's not going to happen. Whenever I released Belmont, that was kind of my dream, was to have a live band that would play that stuff out live. But then I quickly became involved with Viking Guitar Live and then Lonely Rolling Stars. I'm like, okay, I've got my fill of that. So, and plus at the time I was in a local band and I already had enough stuff on my plate. But at this time, I'm perfectly like, very much content with just recording albums of my stuff at home and then just playing the live stuff at MagFest and PAX with Eric and the Lonely Rolling Stars guys. So I'm good with that. But
I mean, that's not to say you've played live shows just on your own with the VGM stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I've played a couple, three or four solo shows, kind of like what Eric does, just completely with backing tracks and that, you know, you just go up there with yourself, your guitar, and that's pretty much all you got. But you know, it's well and good, but I do enjoy playing with a live band the most. So I don't purposely go out and try to get shows as Mega Beardo. I only play them if somebody asks me to. So like I said, I'm much better off, I think, just recording music at home and getting my fill that way, and then doing the big shows once or twice every year or two. So that's kind of where I'm at there.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. And I am still in the middle of recording Belmont 2. So, I probably will take another week or two off just to let Mag cool down and let this flu go away. And then, hopefully by the end of February, have Belmont 2 recorded and then maybe out by, let's say, April. I don't know, somewhere around there.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. So that's the plan. That one is, I've been working on that one for a while. And for a while, some of these songs I wrote back in like 2006 or so.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So some of these songs have been around for a while. A couple of them I wrote, you know, within the last year or two. But basically all the songs I've had for Belmont 1 and Belmont 2, I've been writing forever. So it's good to finally get them kind of out and out of my head a little bit. So, but this one is, pretty damn heavy. It, it didn't start out that way. I basically have rewritten a lot of these songs to kind of like the way I wrote it in 2006 is, way different than my mental state in 2018. So, in 2006, I'm like, oh, cool. I just graduated college. Everything's good. I've got a big boy job and everything's great. Let's do it. And it was a little bit more upbeat and, you know, had a little bit of a pep to it. And now as I've gotten older and as the world has gotten a little darker and our leadership has sunk into the depths of hell, I've, you know, decided that I'm going to have to change my mindset a little bit about how this album sounds because it doesn't fit with how I currently think. So, a lot of the vibe of the album has kind of taken on the context of what the world is kind of going through right now. So there's that.
There are parallels.
Yay, happy. Yeah. There's a lot of parallels.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with Belmont 2 being about this darkness that never seems to end and all this shit. Yeah. It, there's a lot of parallels going on right now. So,
yeah. Well, since you're too polite of a person to do it yourself, Ryan. For anyone listening to this, it, you know, if you go to beardomusic.bandcamp.com, you can get the first Belmont album, and it's pretty fucking awesome. It was some of the stuff that I was listening to in the early days of being like, who the fuck is this guy and why don't I know about him already before asking him to be part of the band. So you all should go listen to that.
Thank you. Thank
yeah, he does some pretty okay music.
It's yeah, all right. Yeah.
Oh man, dude, his Legend of Zelda album is still one of the heaviest VGM things I've ever heard. It's amazing.
I think over the years I have played every single song off of that EP, which I mean there's not a bunch, but there's God four. Damn, it is so good.
No, yeah. Each one fucking rips your guts out through you. I'm trying to think the old blood eagle wings.
I'm trying to think if there's ever been a show where I've played all four songs at once.
Well, no, I mean you'd kill people.
Which, you know, I mean, if I had listeners, that would matter.
Oh, right. as far as Viking guitar stuff coming up, it, you know, I don't know. This last album we put out as a band, Warpath, you know, the original plan was to have this out in early 2016, which obviously is before now. But it was just, you know, people were moving and other work obligations and just all sorts of shit happening. And so, we just got it out, but that's just to say that I don't know when the next time we're going to get a Viking Guitar Live album out is. I'm in the process of, you know, I work a day job and then I do, all this contract music stuff and it's, you know, it's very expensive in California. Just the cost of living and, I've been trying for a few years to make the final push to get it to a point where I can, you know, kind of shelve the day job and just do the music. And this last year, it's resulted in me basically doing both for about 30 plus hours a week each. And it's just been a rough year and I'm kind of fried. So I don't know exactly how that's going to pan out. You know, there's part of me that wants to not push the contract stuff as much this year and actually focus on making more music I want to. And there's another side of me that wants to make a stronger push, which would result in, you know, not as much Viking guitar stuff, but, we'll see. I mean, you know, I have the idea for that Dead Horse thing. There are a couple other, album type projects and another, band type project that are just kind of bouncing around in my mind as things I'd like to do. Outside of new music, Grant and I are going to be playing at Rockage next month, February 10th, which is out here in San Jose, California, with some other good bands. The Koopas are going to be there. Super Madness is going to be there. I think Super Soul Bros is. And then I think in April, I think we're going to be playing, surprise, surprise, an acoustic set up in Sacramento, California. Grant and I are. And,
yeah, Grant mentioned that one. I'm very curious to hear more about Viking Guitar Acoustic.
I am too. I think I should start arranging those songs because it's only a couple months out.
I was asking him, do you know if it's going to be recorded or streamed at all? Because I want to see that.
I have no idea. And in all honesty, there are certainly things that could happen over the next few months that might end up canceling it. I don't think that's the case. We're still shooting to make it happen, but you know, it's been kind of a turbulent few months, just in our personal lives, individually. But, outside of that, you know, MagWest is coming up this summer. I don't know if we're playing or not, but we'll certainly be there to hang out. There's a slim chance I might be, flying up and doing a solo show in Canada sometime this summer. And who knows what else the future brings, you know? Viking guitar is still very much a priority to me, no matter what form it takes. And, you know, like Ryan said, you know, I enjoy playing the solo shows, and I do actually seek those out when I have the time and gumption to do so. But the full 5-person band is really, where it's at for me. So, you know, regardless of how much or how little I end up doing solo shows or releases, as Viking Guitar in the near future, pretty much any opportunity I get to have the full band play somewhere where it's not going to just bankrupt us for getting there, I really, you know, that's my priority, and I want to make that happen as much as possible. So, you know, we played a couple PAXs last year, and Mag right now, who knows if we, you know, there's a slim chance we might be able to get the band out for Mag West or, you know, one of the other PAXs or some other similar event. And, you know, that's kind of at the top of the food chain for me in terms of things I'd like to see happen this year.
Nice. Well, whatever you guys are at, if I am nearby, I definitely want to be there, because it is always, always a pleasure watching you guys play live.
Well, good.
Going deaf.
Thank you.
Wear earplugs, man. We do.
Yeah, I probably should. Oh, man. On that note, it has been quite a while. I don't want to take up all of your days. It has been absolutely fantastic getting the both of you on. Eric, I'm glad to finally have you on the show for once.
Dude, me too. I've been talking about it a while, so I'm glad I finally had time to do it.
Yeah, I play your music all the time on here, so I figure might as well get you on here to chat.
Well, thanks, dude. It's been great finally getting to meet you and talk to you. And you know, I even enjoy still talking to Ryan sometimes, so.
He could be, you know, all right, I guess. So, at the end of the show, I usually play a couple of songs. I'll get your guys' opinions. Any favorites that I should play off the new album, or any previous release stuff that you want to hear?
Well, I mean, for me, the off the new album, the 7th Saga song, Time is a Wheel, that's hands down my favorite track on that record, and probably my second favorite Viking Guitar song in general. So that's where my vote would go. If people want to hear new stuff, and this one is brand new, we've never played it live, we've never recorded it in any version before, so that's where my vote goes.
What about you, Ryan? My
vote? Let's see, I would probably go, let's just go with a straight up ass kicker of... what'd you call it? Scorched Earth?
Yeah, the Zelda one.
Yeah. That's just a straight up ass kicker. I think people kind of get drawn into that one a lot because it's pretty recognizable, but it's one of those that hasn't quite been played to that level of intensity. And then and there's a lot of dynamics in that one as well that I really enjoy. It goes from heavy to light back to heavy, and you know, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, nice. I like that one too. And if I could recommend one more, actually, just because, you know, his name came up earlier in this, but Travis Morgan, our previous bassist, there's a song off Legion called, Stainless Steel and Snare. And, you know, we're all on that. We all play it, but really, Travis and, our drummer, Adam, that's their song, and they both do incredible work on it. And it's kind of a deep cut in terms of source material. So if you're looking for a third one, that's what I'd say.
Yeah, that's a good one for sure.
Nice. I do appreciate the fact that the first two songs you guys picked are both songs that I've already played on the show.
Whoops.
Well,
in that case, fucking play Trigon, man.
Do
that
one. Or Umbop.
Oh, don't you dare.
I have played Umbop on the show before.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not afraid to do it again.
Yeah, the voice of Umbop is our friend Ryan right here, so there's no running from it now.
I burned that to a CD to listen to in the car the one time, and I pulled up to a stoplight, and the windows were down, and that was cranked, and it was like a little girl just staring at me in the car next to me like, I know this song, but what the fuck is wrong with it?
Yeah. Who fucking gives a shit?
God.
Oh,
that's such a good song.
I think it's safe to say Ryan and I are both canceling our previous nominations in favor of Oombop.
Sure.
Go for Sounds it. Good. Well, guys, again, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. Where can we get the album? How much is it? Give us the details.
Yeah, vikingguitar.bandcamp.com. The album is called Warpath, and it is up there. You can buy it digitally now for $6, 7 songs, 38 minutes. So it's, you know, it's got a little bit of girth to it. And you can also pre-order the CD there as well. I'll be completely honest, we don't know exactly what the CD is going to turn out being. We're still finalizing the rest of the art. But if you want something you can hold in your hand and, you know, get signed at some point or something like that, you can pre-order the compact disc now. So that's where it is, vikingguitar.bandcamp.com.
And just to clarify, this will be on an actual CD and not on a slap bracelet, correct?
No, what we're doing is we're Grant and I talked about this last night, actually. What we're going to do is we're going to get custom-made ring pops. And after you eat all the way through the ring pop portion, if you're lucky enough to not accidentally swallow the small little Logitech USB drive, then that is where the album will be.
Sweet.
Yeah. We assume no liability for choking or digestive problems as a result of the Viking Guitar Warpath ring pop album.
I really want that to happen now. That would be amazing. Where's your album? I don't know, man. I think I swallowed it. Yeah. It was really good, though. It was like really, really good.
I'll get it to you in a day or so.
It was watermelon. Fucking delicious.
Watermelon.
No, the Viking Guitar ones, they're all mutton flavored.
They all taste like beef broth.
Oh my God. A beef-flavored ring pop. Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. Our VGL, yeah, the Viking Guitar album is inside this bouillon cube.
Oh, yeah. God. God. The marketing plan is we need to find a way to make it so no one will buy this fucking thing.
Holy shit. You guys are insane. So on that note, thank you everyone for listening to the show. Eric, do you have any final words to end the episode?
You're just baiting me. You know what I'm going to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, everyone listening, keep the world metal.
2018, right? What the fuck happened last year? I think the one thing we can take away from it is a cold world and a dark world.